Welcome back, everybody, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because this is all I do, amicable divorces. We're in the middle of a mini-series, a two-part, two-week discussion of trust. Last week, we posted on trust, and this week, we're going to post on an extension of that conversation. So a little recap from last week, part one. We first of all defined what trust is, and here are the definitions we used. Trust is the reliability and the truthfulness of another person or entity. Trust is confidence in the honesty and integrity of another person. Trust in a personal, family, or business relationship is also an outgrowth of how you're treated. And you see, this is what we don't realize. When we talk about trust, we really think about infidelity. That's our first go-to issue of trust. But when we look at how we're treated by another person, that in and of itself creates a trustful or lack of trust relationship. For instance, does your partner or manager, employer demean you, disregard your thoughts, ideas, wishes, and treat you abusively? That's a sign of a lack of trust. Is your partner reliable when they say they're going to do something? Something as simple as pick you up at a prearranged time. As ridiculous as you may think that example is, I know somebody that could never, ever be trusted about picking one of the family members up on time, even at the airport. Even at the airport, they weren't on time. Hour or two, people had to wait if that person was going to pick them up. So these are all examples of how distrust manifests itself in a relationship. And we also talked about in part one, how to behave in a way that builds trust in a relationship and to identify behavior patterns that might lead to a breach of trust over time. So I encourage you to go back to last week's episode if you have not listened to Trust Part 1 and listen to that, and this is going to be a great extension of that conversation. So in today's episode, Trust Part 2, what we didn't talk about was how you, the one who feels they have misplaced their trust, possibly created their own nightmare of distrust. Hard to accept, but we're going to talk about it. Not to relieve the distrustor from their responsibilities, the distrustor being the person who perpetrated the distrust, but sometimes the distrustor acts in reaction to the other spouse, who may not be available for sex and intimacy, or who may erode the interest and willingness of the distrustor to feel wanted or needed. Maybe the distrustor has tried to share their feelings and concerns about the relationship, but either got nowhere or had a hard time truly communicating their feelings. Because trust is a two-way street. If you want to have somebody that you truly trust in, you have to create that ground yourself or create that environment in which trust can be placed. Today, we're going to spend some time talking about the steps both people in a relationship can take to rebuild trust and provide examples of how to do that. And I will also, at the end of this, give you two examples of real life stories where there was distrust. One was about infidelity and one was about how they were treated. And I want to show you how they worked out their relationship. So I'm going to pull from two articles. I'm going to pull from an article about rebuilding trust after cheating, affairs, and infidelity. That's going to be first. And then I'm going to read you an article that actually blew me away. And I had really never thought about this before. It's an article titled, How to Develop Self-Trust. And I think this is one of the most important articles I've read on the issue of trust and relationship building. This is the foundation upon which our individual sense of trust and compassion is formed. And then we bring this to the relationship. So the first one being rebuilding trust after cheating, affairs, and infidelity. If you have been lied to or hurt, it can take a very long time to learn trust again. You might automatically think you should break up with the person who betrayed your trust. I mean, isn't that what we think with infidelity, a lot of us, right? However, others may wish to keep a relationship going, believing that their partner's actions aren't bad enough to give up on the relationship. Either way, it's important to build up trust again after difficult situations, either between you and your partner or you and future partners. So this is me. I was cheated on. But I am more fascinated in human behavior and the motivation that created the decision to cheat than the actual cheating. I mean, I know it's weird. I agree that I can be weird, but when I was cheated on, I was really fascinated about why. When I listen to the reason for cheating, that will let me know the direction to go in the relationship and how to correct it. So back to the article. When trust has been broken, such as cheating, and you're trying to rebuild trust, it may not be wise to cast all your doubts aside in one go-around. Don't be so quick to say, okay, honey, I forgive you. Thanks for telling me. However, if you still hope to rebuild trust, you will need to let some of your doubts go or suspend them to give your partner the chance to come through for you. Then if your partner doesn't, it's he or she who is disrupting the trust building. But in any relationship, especially in one that's been threatened by infidelity, now here's the key, healthy communication plays an important role. Each partner should be able to talk honestly, and if an argument ensues, both people should, quote unquote, fight fair without dredging up the past. Well, I have a little issue with this. If you don't bring up the past as it applies to the infidelity in order to understand why it happened, then where do you go? I mean, you have to bring up the past in regards to why the cheating took place. To rebuild trust, keep in mind that your relationship may look different after cheating or affairs and other infidelities. However, it's also possible to rebuild something new. And that's probably what it will be, though both partners need to be willing to build a new relationship together. I mean, so the willingness has to be there. So I'm going to break off and give you a little example. I was watching Sex and the City Part 2, the movie, last weekend. This got me on the whole issue of trust, watching the movie. And so there was a scene in Part 2 where Miranda, one of the four principal female characters in Sex and the City, marries Steve, and Steve adores Miranda. Couldn't be a more loving, sweet person. But Miranda stopped being a sexual partner. Her roles as mother, they had a child, and lawyer, that was her job, preempted engaging in her role as wife. And she basically stopped having sex with Steve for 6 months. Steve, unfortunately, then had a moment of weakness or a moment of need. I know we say weakness, but a moment of sexual need and had sex. But he came to Miranda and confessed. And then that started this whole blow up. Okay, we'll get back to this. It is extremely challenging to remain in the present and move forward toward the future after someone cheats. Miranda had a hard time with this. It can be easier to remain in or worry about the past. And that really is a case-by-case situation. So Steve would have never cheated had Miranda been having sex with him because he really loved having sex with Miranda. And she loved having sex with him until they had a child. Does this sound familiar to your relationship? While the someone who's been cheated on has the right to feel hurt, angry or sad, if he or she cannot move on from those feelings, Miranda, it may be a sign that the relationship cannot continue. Well, here's the deal. So Steve and Miranda eventually came to grips with her behavior, as the real issue that led to the second issue of infidelity. And they realized that Steve was not, totally sorry and that she really loved him. And that's how they came back together. She needed her time apart. We're going to talk about that in a second. She needed time apart. So they did take time apart. She even considered divorcing. But then with time is the great healer. With time, she started questioning herself and her role that led Steve. After talking to her girlfriends, the other three cast members, and saying, you know, how often do you have sex? And everybody answered in a way different way. One person already had a child and everybody worked. And so it's tough. I know that when a woman works and has a child and is married, it's really the sex that goes by the wayside, but biology wins. Biology always wins, and you're setting yourself up for being cheated on. So maybe a good conversation to have before you have a child is the reality of how you're going to do everything, women, because it's really almost impossible to do everything. One thing will go by the wayside, and it really typically is sex. So that's your reality. All right, back to the article. It's important, although difficult, to trust yourself. Learning to trust yourself and your own feelings and reassuring yourself that you will be okay moving forward is the key to any healthy relationship. So within all of this trust stuff is trusting yourself, and that's going to be the next article I read. Perhaps the most important aspect of rebuilding trust, we're back to that, after a partner has cheated, is to communicate openly. Communication is the key in every single relationship. I don't care what it is. Marriage, friendship, family, work, you have to communicate effectively, openly, and honestly. Talking and truly listening to each other is absolutely important. Both partners should think about what the other needs. Not just what one needs, what the other needs, what you both need. Partners should openly share their needs and consider whether they're willing to meet those needs. You need to be in a relationship for a little while before you even know what your needs are. And isn't that interesting? Yes, we have to discuss what our needs are. And sometimes, I mean, we know what our basic needs are going into a relationship. But once in a relationship with a specific person, we may find we have other needs as well. So I think you have to have an ongoing discussion about your needs. Partners should openly share their needs and consider whether they are willing to meet those needs. Now that's on the other side of this. Are you willing and interested in meeting your partner's needs? Maybe your partner is too needy and that's too much for you. Maybe. If either party feels that they are not willing or able to meet his or her partner's needs, the couple may need to seriously reconsider whether continuing the relationship is the right thing to do. However, if you're the one who cheated, what do you do? For example, maybe you cheated on your partner, but you have agreed to try and make the relationship work. What do you need going forward so that you don't cheat? You must be very clear about that. You must be very clear about your own needs and how you would like your partner to meet those needs. To begin with, cheater, distrustor, sorry about that. Take responsibility for your actions. Admit to your behavior without excuses and assume responsibility. Also, have an understanding of how your behavior has affected your partner's feelings. Reflect on your actions and think about what made you decide to cheat. So again, this open conversation. Not to blame, just to explain. Going forward, keep your promises. To show that you can be trusted, follow through with what you say you are going to do. For example, if you say you're going to call, make sure you bloody actually call and on time. A couple minutes early may not be a bad idea, but on time. It's also important to give your partner space during this time. Your partner may want some time apart to process what happened, or he or she has every right to feel hurt and angry about your cheating. Give him or her the space to express these feelings to you. Suck it up and listen. It's so hard. Just suck it up and listen. Don't make faces. Just try and be as empathetic as possible. The process of rebuilding trust takes time. It can't happen overnight. Still, keep in mind that your partner has no right to treat you abusively. Despite breaking their trust, you still have the right to your own privacy and needs. All right, now here's the other article, and this one I absolutely love, and I can't even believe I was lucky enough to find it. How to develop self-trust. So before I even read from the article, I have to share with you, I found this hugely important for me. I'm a people pleaser. I will quite often say what I think will please the other person and put my own preferences, desires, and needs aside for the benefit of pleasing the other person, because somehow I get off on pleasing other people, but to the detriment of myself sometimes. And then I don't seem consistent. I did it in my own marriage. I never, ever wanted to be a mother. It's not that I don't like children. I love children, especially my 5 nieces and nephews, and proudly my 1 great niece. It's that I didn't want to be a mom. I didn't want that role. Yet, I said that I did want to have children in the pre-marriage talk that everybody should have, but I couldn't fulfill it once it was put to a reality test. I couldn't fulfill that people-pleasing goal, and I felt awful. And so I released my ex-husband to marry somebody who absolutely wanted to have a family. He deserved nothing less. And I have to use that as an example going forward. Sometimes I'm good and express myself in terms of my needs, and sometimes I'm not, and it's really an ongoing process of just getting better and getting better at this. So here's the article. The fact of the matter is that you can never count on another person 100% of the time. And why is that? Because we're all fallible. We all screw up. Expect it. Those should be in the wedding vows. We all screw up, and we have to be ready for it and ready to deal with it. However, there is one person we know that we can count on: ourselves. As Johann Wolfgang von Goethe said, and he was a German writer and statesman from 1749 to 1832, but wasn't he smart? As quote unquote, as soon as you trust yourself, you will know how to live. Again, as soon as you trust yourself, you will know how to live. Meaning you will know how to express yourself honestly and accurately under any and all circumstances. Self-trust is an important concept, as possessing it enables you to protect your own needs and safety. It allows you to have faith that you will make it through challenging situations, and this is so important, allows you to practice kindness towards yourself rather than pursuing perfection. Again, it allows you to practice kindness towards yourself rather than pursuing perfection. Self-trust includes having an awareness of your thoughts and feelings and being able to express them. Oh, this is so hard. To gain self-trust, honor your emotions and avoid relying on the opinions of others. This is my mother. Always relies on the opinions of others to know, to use that as a barometer to gauge herself. Not the way to go. This allows you to develop trust in your own ability to handle whatever arises. Yes, those issues in your marriage. If you trust yourself, you can develop trust in your own ability to handle whatever arises. Self-trust is acquired by nurturing our deepest thoughts. Self-trust also includes living according to your own standards and ethics, and knowing when to put your own needs first. Okay, a little example from yesterday for me. I had a 2 o'clock appointment with an attorney who I was going to do a pre-interview for to talk about, in an upcoming little series of episodes, adult child support. And yesterday being a Friday, and we're in the, you know, safer at home stage of the quarantine for the coronavirus 19. I, being an essential business, have been in the office every day, although I live a quarantined life. I live alone, I work alone, I drive alone. On a normal day, I'm a perfect hermit for this. But as we initiated the call for the 2 o'clock appointment, apparently I sounded as tired as I felt. I was emotionally tired. I was not physically tired. I was emotionally tired. And she heard it in my voice and she said, "It sounds like you may need some time to yourself." And I said, "I can't even believe you said this." I would have definitely conducted the pre-interview. I was ready for it. But as soon as it's over, I planned on going home. I need time to decompress. And she said, "I'm going to give you that time right now. Let's do this Monday." And we rescheduled for Monday. And I even told her, I said, "This is so funny because I'm going to be reading an article for the second episode on trust. And it's about expressing what your needs are." And I so seldom do that. It's always other people first, other people first. In this business of mediation and divorce, it's other people first. And once in a while, I need to take care of myself. And I said, "I'm going to take you up on this. Thank you so much." And she said, "I am happy to allow you to do that. We'll have a great conversation on Monday." And we'll talk on Monday. And so you see how this is an ongoing process. You have to practice it all the time if it's not your nature. So back to the article. Having self-trust requires knowing that you can endure mistakes. Self-trust also enables you to pursue what it is that you want. Avoid people who undermine your self-trust, even if you're already married to them. Often these people use you and don't want you to succeed. Although as children, we often cannot control the negative people we have in our lives, as adults, we can certainly consider whether people support us and whether we actually want them in our lives. Keep promises to yourself. Honor the commitments you make to yourself, whether it be pursuing goals you set or following your dreams. One example of such a commitment is creating and sustaining a personal boundary. Think about what this means in your own life. Be the mom. Oh, that's right. There's a commercial. Be the mom in this commercial running on TV currently, who locks herself in the bathroom, sitting on the bathroom floor, eating Pepperidge Farms Milano cookies, and won't come to the door to unlock it when their child is banging on it, and actually pretends she's the father, not the mother. She built a boundary. Building self-trust also includes becoming your own best friend. And you can't become your own best friend unless you build boundaries in which to contain what you need to be the healthiest person you can possibly be, and trust yourself that you will take care of your own needs. Speak kindly to yourself. Everyone has a harsh inner critic. This is me, which sometimes takes the voice of a parent or a teacher from your past who made you think you weren't good enough. Okay, well, that was me that made me think I wasn't good enough. How about you? Do you have that harsh inner critic? And why do you have it? Figure out where it came from. Mine came from me as a child. My mother too. My dad was not a harsh critic. But I think I was harder on myself than my mother. Honestly, I do. Where did your inner critic come from? However, you can reduce or eliminate the habit of listening to your inner critic. Try being more kind to yourself. Does that mean scheduling more shopping trips if that's the thing that makes you happy? When the malls open again, I am heading so fast to Century City Mall. That is, for me, the happiest place on earth, and that is exactly where I'm going. Then I'm going to the miniature golf course in Sherman Oaks, and then to all of my favorite restaurants. Oh, I so have this planned out when we're allowed to do this. But yes, whatever it takes to make yourself feel good, I mean healthy, do it. Now, this is about making mistakes and being your own inner critic. For example, if you make a mistake, you may immediately think, I'm so stupid. Instead, try saying to yourself, that's okay. It was just a minor error. Showing yourself compassion when you make a mistake enables you to show a greater understanding of others when they make mistakes too. The kinder you are to yourself, the kinder you'll be to other people. The opposite, the harsher you are to yourself, the harsher you will be to other people. It's really true. The more you take care of yourself, the more you'll be able to understand and give compassion to other people when they make mistakes. Self-trust is not about perfection. You must have faith in your own capacity to overcome a slip-up or failure. Self-trust is nurtured through us connecting with our emotional well-being and paying attention to any disturbances we may notice. Check in with yourself. Be mindful of your inner experiences. Self-trust develops when we honor our whole selves, regardless of whether or not we approve of certain aspects of ourselves. That, to me, is one of the best articles I've read in a long time. Now, let me give you two examples of real-life stories that might help you. One is about infidelity. One is about communication and the behavior of one spouse to another. So let me do that one first. So let's look at Alice and Jack. Alice and Jack really did have a pretty good courtship, but it was a little rocky. It wasn't a smooth sailing from courtship to marriage, but they did go through all the right conversations about sharing ethics, morals, what they wanted to accomplish in life, and their feelings about family and how they looked at their roles as mother and father in a family. So as the marriage took place, Alice developed her own separate life in order to keep the marriage together because the communication and the behavior from Jack was horrible. It was demeaning. It was condescending. Jack didn't find pleasure in much of what Alice did. He criticized the meals she tried to cook for him. He didn't give her the attention that he should have. He didn't make her feel special at the beginning of their marriage. He didn't know how. He didn't get the tools from the way he grew up, from one of his parents, and he was a narcissist. And nobody realized that. We didn't use the words, or they didn't use the word narcissist back then. We've only started using narcissist over the past few years, but he was a narcissist. He came first. Everybody else had to come second. Didn't mean he was the worst person walking the face of the earth, but it meant that he didn't know how to be in a committed relationship. He didn't know how to be part of a team. A narcissist cannot be part of a team. A narcissist comes first. They have to be on top. They have to be in control. They had their first child, and it didn't change. The behavior of Jack did not change. It probably just got worse. So Alice was going to divorce him, and then she got pregnant with her second child. So the divorce didn't happen. In order to keep the marriage together, Alice formed her own life. She was a dutiful wife and mother. She did everything right to keep the home going. She could go to any event with Jack and make Jack look good. And she looked good. She's a wonderful human being. And Jack has his redeeming qualities. Please don't think he doesn't. He has his redeeming qualities. He was a phenomenal provider, made lots of money, allowing Alice to create her own life. Out of the city where they lived, a second home, where there was an activity that she loved that she could engage in. So the family is still intact as far as I know, but Alice has her own life and her life goes on as this second parallel life. The kids are well educated. She has a fabulous relationship with them and nobody from the outside really would know why this other life exists, but she does. And she did the thing that she needed to do in order to keep the marriage together because she understood her priorities. And her priorities really were, if possible, let's keep the family together. So we'll see how this works out in her children's lives. We'll see how her children's develop, both of her children develop relationships because they had two children. We'll see. Life isn't perfect. We do the best we can. But that's how communication and the treatment we get plays out in a marriage. And the trust. Because she was able to trust herself and know what she needed in order to keep the relationship together. And she did it. She takes care of herself while she also takes care of her family. Now, there's another example of somebody you may know if you have the guilty pleasure habit that I do of watching those reality shows on Bravo. I watch all the Housewives series. Andy Cohen, shout out. Thank you for producing those shows. I absolutely love them. So this is about Portia and Dennis. Portia is on The Housewives of Atlanta. So last season, we have them... Two seasons ago, Portia got pregnant before they got married, but they were planning their marriage. And while she was pregnant, Dennis cheated. I know, it's the worst of all situations. While she was pregnant, Dennis cheated. So we got to see the therapy sessions on camera in the season that just concluded or is about to conclude. We got to see the issue playing out, Portia and explaining how trust had to be rebuilt for her, bringing both her family and Dennis's mother together on the show to talk about what the entire family had to do now that the baby was born and in order for Portia and Dennis to get married and have a trusting relationship. And then Dennis started talking after a while. So Dennis did apologize, accepted that he did something horrible, distrustful. But then Dennis wants to talk about what drove him to that, and Portia's not really ready to listen to this yet. So we're in the middle of this therapy session now where Portia has to listen to why Dennis did what he did. And we know from previous therapy sessions that Dennis was having an issue with the way Portia established her boundaries or allowed Dennis to have his boundaries. Portia has a hard time realizing that Dennis is allowed to have boundaries, as is she. She was drawing from her marriage with Cordell Stewart, the former quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. A, I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and B, never liked Cordell Stewart as the quarterback. And now all of a sudden, seasons ago, he's on the Atlanta Housewives. Small world. Cordell treated Portia abusively, very abusively, wouldn't have a child with her, and it was a terrible breakup. It happened on television. It was absolutely horrible. I'm humiliated he ever played with the Steelers. I those Steelers are precious to me. But see, Portia comes from an abused relationship with a former husband, has a great relationship with her mother and sister. Dad passed away years ago. So it was from a former marriage. The Portia was demeaned and mistreated, and so she's very sensitive now. And the worst of all happened. She's pregnant, and Dennis cheated. Lied about cheating first and then came clean. So now they're at the stage of rebuilding trust. And in order to do so, Portia has to listen to Dennis and what his needs are. And that's very hard for Portia. So that's where we're at. They have to work that portion out. And I think they will. And as the season concludes, we'll figure this out. So now that this is being recorded in real time, check out the Atlanta Housewives. I think it's on Sunday nights to see how the Portia Dennis rebuilding of trust issue plays itself out. So that's what I've got for you today. Thank you so much for listening to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host. Please send this to anybody you know that needs to listen to episodes on trust. Please be a subscriber to the podcast. If you're not, go on Podbean. That's where you can subscribe. We are on every platform known to mankind, Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher. If you would like to reach me by email, it's Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com, Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com. And if you would like to contact me for any kind of divorce issues, if you're in the Southern California area, the company is divorceresourceinc.com, divorceresourceinc.com. Thank you again for listening, and I can't wait for next week.